Don de Lenguas, el programa de la Facultad de Traducción y Documentación en Radio Universidad de Salamanca. Los miércoles a las 6 de la tarde en Aula 89. Don de Lenguas, un espacio realizado por profesores y alumnos de la Facultad de Traducción y Documentación de la Universidad de Salamanca. En Radio USAL, Don de Lenguas.
Welcome to Don de Lenguas, the podcast where languages, cultures, and communication come alive. Today's episode is a special one, I think. We are joined by a guest brought to us by a friend, a very good friend, and collaborator of the program, Pedro Álvarez Mosqueda. Today, we'll be talking about the importance of expressing oneself in one's own language, and about the initiatives being developed not only in Spain to promote and support a language, for example, such as Galician. Our guest has chosen this tune. Why did you choose this tune?
Antes de todo, is it in English or in Spanish?
In Spanish.
English.
Great, not a problem. So, Suprabhat means good morning in my language, which is Bengali, spoken by 280 million people. And it's a national language of Bangladesh, an independent country. So as I'm coming from the region called, West Bengal, which has a capital as Kolkata or Calcutta. And this song is particularly written by an emblematic author those many of us would know is Rabindranath Tagore. So it has its own precursor for me because it always impacted me as a person, as also as a researcher. So when back in 2005, when I started studying about Spanish for the very first time, so there are a lot of different experiences that occurred with me, but I ended up having some interest with other languages of Spain. And that's the point where I started my research and ended up doing the research about Galician language, which happens to be one of the minority languages in Spain. So that created an interest. And there was no research prior to it from an Indian background researcher coming to do a research on Galician language. So that's why I thought that it was one of these. This song actually states that if nobody is with you, you go ahead, people will be with you in a later time because they will see the importance of this research.
Fantastic.
20 years down the line.
Fantastic. Amazing, yeah. Amazing. Well, it's really amazing. Martin. So, guest.
Well, Manuel, today we're joined by a very special guest. He is Dr. Anik Nandi, who is a distinguished scholar specializing in language policy, as he has just told us. And he's also specialized in literary practices in multilingual contexts. He currently serves as Associate Professor of Multicultural Communication at Woksan University in India, where he also leads strategic initiatives such as the Center for Languages and Multicultural Communication and the first Galician Studies Center in Asia, this latter one funded by the Xunta de Galicia. He holds a PhD from Heriot Watt University, and his academic trajectory includes research positions at the University of the Basque Country and Queen's University, Belfast, supported by major funding from the European Union and also the Spanish Ministry of Science. Dr. Nandi, our today's guest, maintains active academic links as a visiting researcher at the Leiden University Center for Linguistics in the Netherlands, as well as the University of Salamanca and the University of Alicante. In addition, he collaborates externally with the Royal Galician Academy, the Instituto da Lingua Galega, and the UNESCO Chair on World Linguistic Heritage at the University of the Basque Country. We're also told, by the way, that he has been the first Indian sociolinguist, the first researcher on sociolinguistics from India to study other Spanish languages different than Spanish.
Wow, this is a lot of things. Pedro, and where's the link between both of you?
Well, first of all, Manuel, it's great to be back. Okay, thank you for hosting us. Our paths have crossed multiple times in the recent years, but in today's occasion, it has to do with Lingua South. Lingua South is a new chair that I will define as a platform of a collaboration that operates as a strategic bridge between Southern Europe, more specifically Spain, and the African continent and India as a subcontinent. And the reason why is because we seek into addressing a historical debt by finally giving the languages and the knowledges of the Global South the recognition and the space that they deserve. So with this chair, we want to bring their voices to the core of our university, to the core of Spain, to the core of the EU, and we aim to foster research and dissemination that have to do with what they see, what they find, what they value, what they can bring to us. And of course, many of these languages and many of these cultures have invaluable cultural, historical, and epistemological value. On top of that, as a social linguist, I think that one of the main goals of this chair is also to focus on the study and management of multilingualism as a strategic issue for mutual understanding, for educational innovation, for social cohesion, and so on. And of course, in this battle, we cannot do that all of that alone. We need important role players. And this is the space that we are creating, and Onik is here on a very special mission.
Mm-hmm. One question that raised up and now popped up is, what led you to study or work with a Galician language in India? No? So a big country, and so are language like Galician. I don't know how many people speak Galician in Spain.
It's roughly less than 3 million people, let's say so. And the figures are decreasing at the moment. But I think he can tell us, perhaps, Nick, if... because it's the first time that we have such an opportunity to have someone like with your profile here. You can tell us a little bit about the multilingual background or the multilingual situation that you have in your country, and then we will connect the dots all the way from what you are and what you have and how you ended up here and specifically working with Galician.
Well, that's grand. Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's always good to talk about your own country, right? It becomes slightly difficult when it reaches the beyond the limits and you start studying something else, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, obviously, as being an Indian scholar, it would have been much more normal for me to study something on Indian multilingualism, which is also incredible to study a lot of space of doing research. And to be very frank, a large part of it during our own conversations regarding the research, we have found that there are several areas still to be touched upon. Mm-hmm. So let's say that India has 780 languages, and if we want to go for mother tongues according to 2011 census or even before it registers like 3,372 mother tongues. So which is also sometimes a kind of a difficult, we always as researchers try to see things numerical value. Mm-hmm. But when we want to see it from the perspective, because sometimes the numbers may not decide that how many languages are spoken.
That's correct.
And also, as we both have researched in Global South context, we know that a defining language is a job of a next level job, to be very frank, that what is a language and what is not. So there are a lot of discourses around that. So let's stick to the point. We have done a survey which is known as People's Linguistic Survey of India in India. It is done by Dr. G. N. Devi, who actually coordinated the whole story over there. And he was also connected to Lingua Parks Group, which is also very well known in terms of minority languages in Spain. Mm-hmm. So when this whole process took place, I had a chance to be part of it as I was doing my MA thesis in University of Santiago de Compostela, which was about a comparative study between language policies or governmental language policies between India and Spain. So the reason behind it, like if you see it, 780 languages, 22 official languages, and there are a wide range of languages that are not even counted by the government but considered as a language. Mm-hmm. First, say that if a language community has less than 10,000 speakers, Indian government would not consider it as a language. And if we see it,
can you imagine?
That's what I'm saying. That's like you can imagine the situation, what we are talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And an Indian kid could easily grow up with five languages with no issues attached. Just to get an idea that, let's consider that one father or like a parents are coming from two different languages spoken in two different corners of India. Mm-hmm. And they're growing up in a city where none of these languages are spoken. So maybe the three languages already staying at home is language one of the father, language one of one from the mom, and then you also have English. Already you have three languages. Then the nanny who might speak Hindi, or you have the language which is used outside and in the school system. At the end of the day, you are ending up as a minimum of five languages. Mm-hmm. As a kid, you will always learn at least three different language related alphabets. So that's the diversity that we are talking about.
And something that I like about this, Onik, and it's something that I think we need to underline and highlight in this podcast or in this platform, is the fact that examples such as the ones that Onik is describing today illustrate how multilingualism is the norm. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of the valuable lessons that we can take from the Global South, mm-hmm. normalizing the fact that languages live together, the multilingualism. We know that from the mm-hmm. psychological point of view and cognitive point of view, mm-hmm. our brains are meant to be multilingual. They can cope yes. with multiple languages, but now this is a social level, right? Where they provide us with instances of coexistence. And of course, there are challenges there. And we are not saying that mm-hmm. that comes in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. But we find it important. And I'm very happy that you just mentioned or you just described to us what you normally can see in India.
I think that this is a very important point, because to express yourself with your own language is very important. The language that you really earn the heritage touch at home, what you learn there, and how to say or to feel or to express these feelings. You know? And sometimes here in May, we are going to have the Europe Day, mm-hmm. the 9th of May. So in this day, we have here 24 official languages, but a lot of people in the European Union speak another languages, like Galician. Mm-hmm. But I spoke with some politicians about it is possible that we have these languages in our parliament in mm-hmm. Europe. They say, oh, it's very difficult. It's too expensive to have all these languages. I said to him, but this is a thing of justice. Mm-hmm. Not about efficiency, of justice, that all the citizens can express themselves in their own language. And this is very interesting what happened in India. Four different languages, no?
Growing up.
And people have then the support from the government, I think.
Not necessarily, but that's what we actually have been talking about. This is a normalization process that we grow up with so many languages. So some of these languages, two or three things that I do want to remember in this context. Set, obviously, whenever you want to see things or languages as part of from a colonial perspective, you'll see that speaking many languages is kind of a chaos. So that's what the problem that the colonizers would see since the very beginning, because where the idea is stick to one nation, one language policy. So the things,
and that's a key word, policy.
Policy, because the whole intention is continuously to be managed. You know, language, this needs to be managed. We need to include these languages to the education system. There are a wide range of languages. They are like people in this whole process sometimes forget that these policies are created for people. And without asking the people, even if you want to create the best policy of the world, it might not work. It will totally fall apart. And that's what happens in most of the cases. We have seen similar kind of situations. We have thought this idea in India, for example, including English as an associate language. For information, English is not an official language as such, except one of the states they decided to, like Mizoram, they have taken English as a kind of an official language because there was no other option for them at that point of time. But the most interesting fact is that English is, for Indian context, although this is a no officially official language, which is...
non-officially official language.
Yes. It's kind of no policy. You want it, like, this is the way, because otherwise, because most of these contexts were the post-colonial context, both in Africa you have possibly come across, the work that Portuguese or French normally takes place in the context of African colonies, former colonies. Right now in Indian context, it's the same. English is the main language in terms of work, in terms of administration, in terms of education. You cannot write a PhD thesis in Hindi and or any other language, which are official languages, and expect you to be awarded the thesis. So that is one of the major problems of the hierarchy that we have been discussing earlier.
That's correct. And in fact, one of the things that you can perhaps enlighten us a little bit more and share your views is the fact that, you know, in all these contexts, in the global north and in the global south, we have languages coexisting, right? And as we said before, challenges might arise.
Yes.
All right. We need to sort of like accept that as part of the combo. All right. And as it was research that comes from the global south and researchers in the global north, do you think when it comes to the way we manage, and we talk about policy again, the way we look into the way people think about languages, the way people manage the languages at the family level or social level, do you think that we share the same problems? Are the problems, the challenges viewed in a different way in the global north and the global south? Can we compare them, basically?
Yes, indeed. We can definitely compare them. If we are a minority, depending on wherever you are, you face similar kind of problems. It can be language, it can be minority population, it can be issues related to racial issues, or let's say caste-related issues in the Indian context, for example. Certain things would be always common. But obviously, when you have a better awareness about the context, such as I come across with the people whom I have researched in Galicia or in Basque Country or in the UK context, whether in Scotland or in Northern Ireland, I have come across there is a greater level of language awareness about their capacity, awareness about their rights, which is way lesser in an Indian context.
Okay.
Because that is a work of that we need to focus more on when we are doing the research. That's why we actually, I mean, both of us, we have discussed about this quite a bit, but we need to call for more like action-related research where instead of being in the academic ivory tower, we need to go down with people and work with them and see that how their discourses or the discursive construction of their understanding of language and their rights. That is the part of social justice, what you have mentioned earlier. So that is something we can think about in the process, like this is one of the cases.
And I think in this particular context, academics, we cannot just be passive agents where we're just describing what is happening or sort of like observing and reporting. We can actually lead some of the changes or inspire or provide the basis so the average speaker of such languages might find the reasons to cope, promote, keep, maintain whatever we're going to see our language is doing, right? And that's something that can connect the dots between minority languages in your context and minority languages in the context of Spain or Galicia in particular.
Modernity, Galician modernity. That makes me so happy. Really?
Yes. Well, this song, it's a very special song. I mean, Galician music is evolving, I think, somehow faster sometimes than the speakers themselves. It's leading and opening doors that they were not so prominent in the past. And this song brings urban beats and techno beats with traditional singing and traditional lyrics. These ladies who are singing in the back are on the stage playing the traditional instruments as well. Mm-hmm. And the whole scene, it's a techno festival scenario where everybody's enjoying and you know, the combination between this tradition and modernity. Mm-hmm. Some of these songs have been played at massive festivals in Europe at the mm-hmm. moment. They take the Galician vibes and they take it mm-hmm. To the level.
It's like a ritualization, a new ritualization of the language and the culture. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. And it's one of the things that bring me joy in life. You know, you see your music and language moving forward. You have people like Onik doing research on the ground level. We are now mm-hmm. discussing this at University of Salamanca. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once again, sharing a different side of the culture and the language.
And I have you now two very important people here in research for me, for example, because Global South, I think it's a topic that we have really to face deeply, and it's a very serious topic. Not only Africa, India, South America.
Absolutely.
Too. And I want to ask you now, what's next?
Well, one of these intention would be to give a lecture in CIE in Salamanca mm-hmm. On Monday. So I will be at 12. So I will be offering a lecture about my research in Galicia that took nearly a decade of data set that we can discuss, and mm-hmm. also some interferences from my research in Basque Country. If there is an interest coming up during the talk, so there will be some slides related to it. Mm-hmm. And in the evening, one of my friends also asked me to appear in her class, so that I will be also talking about my research in India. So that would be.
So the next, I guess, is dissemination, and it's also sharing and inspiring new generations of students mm-hmm. about what we do in the ground level. Mm-hmm. And I would say, Monique, and correct me if I'm mistaken, I would say building bridges towards future collaboration as well, because we won't stop here, right?
Well, that's the whole idea, because research cannot be done on one person's endeavor only. So that's the whole reason that the researchers should come together, share ideas, exchange thoughts that will lead to new framework of ideas. That's where we're actually working on right now. So mm-hmm. Like, I really appreciate the support that I received from USAL, for example, in this case. And mm-hmm. I met several interesting and important people here, thanks to Pedro as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be great, that if we develop a kind of a bilateral relationship. We just renewed the MOU, And I really appreciate the internationalization sector of USAL for having me here. Mm-hmm. And also, like, working together would be a great experience indeed.
Absolutely. One of the things that we are exploring these days, and that's because we are working together, is that these languages, the languages from India, are actually spoken in Salamanca. So, once again, who said Salamanca was monolingual? You know,
it
so
is not.
It is not, right? It's so not. That's what's next.
Yeah. Who is monolingual?
That's an odd question.
Nobody is at the same time is. Because think about that. The whole monolingual thing is no longer there. So everybody who is growing up now in the current day scenario, they speak more than one language.
All right, is a
say.
Well, Martin. Time has flown by.
Yes, it has, Manuel. It was a fascinating interview. It was a really, really an honor to have you here, Dr. Anik Nandi. We've learned a lot from you, and we hope to continue doing so with the dissemination. And I've taken notes on the inspiration and sharing initiatives that you want to promote. So we'll be waiting for those to come up.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Muchas gracias.
Anik Dhonnobad. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. We've seen how speaking your own language is not just communication, it's identity, culture, and voice. Until next time, in this is Donde Lenguas.
Donde Lenguas, el programa de la Facultad de Traducción y Documentación en Radio Universidad de Salamanca. Los miércoles a las 6 de la tarde en Aula 89. Donde Lenguas, un espacio realizado por profesores y alumnos de la Facultad de Traducción y Documentación de la Universidad de Salamanca. En Radio USAL, Donde Lenguas.